Court of Ohio is now in open session. The floor is adjourned.
Good morning, may I be seated? The first page of our calendar is 00151, State of Ohio versus Angeles. With honor, Mr. Brooks. I'm sorry, Mr. Burman.
Jim Burman.
Yeah, change the rules here for you.
Chief Justice, Associate Justice, and please the court. Good morning. Reverse order. In this particular case, the appellant was a line mechanic in the Water and Sewer Division of the Utilities Department of the City of Lorain. He and a friend of his were caught stealing brass water meters and selling them for scrap. These are meters that have been salvaged by the city after being replaced with newer meters. The trial court found that Mr. Lozano was a public official under revised code 29.2101A, and that he was subject to prosecution under the theft in office statute under 29.2101. The court appeals to Lorain County affirmed this decision. I realize that in my proposition of law, the proposition was rather large. I think for our purposes here today, if we focus on a narrower issue, it might be instructive. And that issue would be whether a count as a line mechanic is a public official. And if he is a public official, what is it that makes him a public official? Under the definition provided to us in 29.2101A, a public official is any elected or appointed officer or employee or agent of the state or any of its political subdivisions, including but not limited to legislators, judges, law enforcement officers.
Was he an employee of the... Excuse me, sir, go ahead. Was he an employee of the state or political subdivision?
Yes, Your Honor.
Doesn't he fit in that definition?
Well, it would depend. If we focus on the term any, it would seem so. And that would be a very broad interpretation of the statute. But then when we're given examples of those types of officials that have traditionally been treated as public officials, it would appear to be a little narrower. For example, if all public employees were public officials, it certainly wouldn't be necessary to name legislators, judges, and law enforcement officers.
But doesn't the statute say, and not limited to?
Yes, it does. Which brings about the question.
Which means other than the three enumerated positions.
Right. In other words, the way I take that would mean that you could serve in a legislative capacity without necessarily being an elected legislator. You can serve in a judicial capacity by appointment. You can serve as a law enforcement officer by appointment. Yet there are other employees within the federal, state, and local structure that serve in these various capacities who were not so elected. In other words, I think what the statute means is that it includes all of those employees who serve in these various capacities. But when you say included but not limited to, then the question arises as to, well, what else is included and what is the statute limited to? Again, if we're going to give it a broad interpretation and pay attention closely to the word any, then the language that follows would be surplusage.
So don't we also, this is a technical view, but the sentence reads, as you know, public official means any elected or appointed officer, comma,
yes,
or employee or agent. Doesn't the comma set off the first part of that first phrase from the second phrase or rest of the sentence? You don't need a comma before or, certainly. unless the intention is to make or employee or agent a separate, not modified by the first part of the first clause in the sentence.
Yes, I would agree with Your Honor's view of that particular syntax. Then I'm left to the question as to whether the legislature intended to use that type of punctuation. Again, with a broad interpretation, it probably should read any elected or appointed officer, employee, or agent of the state or any political subdivision. That would be another broad way of saying it.
Well, what difference does it make if there's a comma in front of or employee? I mean, the legislature certainly would know how to limit employees, and they've used a broad term. They said people who disregard that phrase, and just read public official is defined employee. What is the difference that you see in that?
Well, the difference that I see is taking into account the punctuation, the term elected and appointed would only modify the noun officer. It wouldn't modify employee or agent.
By reading it that way, it appears to me that the legislature intended to have a very broad meaning to employee, encompassing all employees of the state.
I agree with that. I agree with that. I'm not convinced yet after 25 years that the legislature has the acumen with the language that we might like.
Nor am I.
So what I'm trying to do is read the defining statute as a whole. Because what the court is left with is this. If the last clause of the defining statute is meant to be instructive to us here, in other words, if it's meant to limit the statute in some way, then it becomes ambiguous because courts are left to determine what characteristics do judges, legislators, and law enforcement officers have that makes them public officials, and who else might be in this classification. If you take that reading, you either have to read it that way, or the court has to assume that the last clause actually means nothing. And I think that if we assume that all the words in a statute have some particular meaning, then we're left with an ambiguous statute. If the statute is not ambiguous, then I'm out of business now. But if the statute is ambiguous, then it must be construed. And we look at Section 149, which is the construction statute, to give us some guidance. And there we're invited to look at the purpose that the legislature had in mind, as well as the consequences of a particular construction. Now, if the purpose of the legislature was to somewhat limit those against whom the statute may be enforced, then a broad interpretation would not be, it would obviate that purpose. For example, you would have custodians and filing clerks being for stealing paper clips and paper towels as a county executive for stealing money. I don't think that's what the legislature had in mind. A more narrow interpretation is consistent with the strict construction statute 290104, because strictly construing the statute would mean that we're limiting those who can be prosecuted under that statute, rather than expanding the scope of prosecution. And that would be consistent with what we do in criminal law. I think because of the example that I gave and the disparity in employment capacity, yet the same application of punishment, the Geauga County Court of Appeals and the Cuyahoga County Court of Appeals in State v. Chrysler and in State v. Elijah Havick indicated that in their view, the statute was aiming at those who were in some position of authority or public trust. And that's exactly what this court has done in the past, not in the area of criminal law, but deciding who are public officials and how the various statutes apply to them. In Newman v. Skinner, we had an action for injunctive relief by the state librarian to prevent the board from firing him without the cause. The court agreed with Newman and said that all of the statutory authority is conferred upon the library board, and that the librarian himself was just an employee. His duties were not discretionary, and he neither served in an executive, legislative, or judicial capacity. Both the language of this court here and the language in the statute itself. In Milburn versus Peptel, we had an action, a mandamus action by a local board of elections to get its raise that was authorized by the legislature. This court held no. The authority of the Board of Elections is conferred by statute. We have discretion in dealing with the public. Your public officials in your pay cannot be increased during your term of office. In Schofield versus Strain, again, the city health commissioner removed without cause, filed an action for injunctive relief. The court held, yes, injunctive relief appropriate. All the statutory authority is conferred upon the board, and the commissioner himself is strictly a staffer, not a minor. He has no discretion, and therefore he is an employee, not a public official. Finally, in State versus McKelvey, this was an action by the Monroe County prosecutor to collect funds wrongfully obtained from the county auditor. This court held that the auditor was a public official. He was subject to suit under that statute because, one, the statute, statutory authority is conferred upon the auditor to do his duties. He has discretion, and he takes, of course, a piece of the sovereign with him in dealing with the public. I think what this boils down to, and I hope this is what it boils down to, Your Honors, is this, and that is that if we take the view that this court has taken traditionally in trying to define what is a public official, we find probably three characteristics. One, powers and duties conferred by statute. Two, vested with some authority to carry out executive, judicial, or legislative function. And three, granted some discretion in the carrying out of these duties. In short, and this is what I'm asking the court to adopt as law, in short, what we have is a fiduciary. A public official is a fiduciary. And by fiduciary, I mean in the traditional sense, just as in a position where you've appointed an attorney in fact, it may be a limited power of attorney, but certainly within the conferring of that power, the attorney, in fact, does have some discretion. His authority is conferred, and he truly is a fiduciary.
Do you feel your client should have been charged with grand theft? Is that it?
Well, probably is that, Your Honor. It was found by the Court of Appeals to be less than $500, so it would have been misdemeanor.
Do you feel that the prosecution overcharged your client?
Well, based upon the decisions that have come from the Courts of Appeals, not this court, but the Courts of Appeals, the prosecutor, I think, certainly could make a colorable argument that anybody who's an involved public employee is also a public official.
Is the punishment greater?
Yes, mm-hmm. The punishment is greater. By example, I'm now defending a clerk at a dog pound, Orange County Dog Pound, for that in office.
Why would the General Assembly draw a distinction between, I mean, it seems there's an argument, of course, that you make an argument that the so-called low level, the employee who doesn't exercise discretion or have a fiduciary duty to someone. Why would the General Assembly intend to draw a distinction between a person who is clearly a public official under the statute and one who is not? I mean, if you steal public property, why does it, and the General Assembly decided this would be a felony versus a misdemeanor, why would it make any sense from a public policy standpoint whether one is a person who is, quote, a public official, we all agree, and those who we argue about whether they're public officials? The crime against the state is the same, isn't it?
The crime against the state is the same, Your Honor, but if we look at strictly a criminal law sense and the notion of scienter, you know, and the notion that to whom much is given, from whom much is expected, I think it all makes sense in that regard, and I think that was the basis of the precedent that was set by this court.
Thank you, Mr. Byrd.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Courts.
Good morning, Justices. My name is Robert F. Quartz. I'm here on behalf of the state of Ohio. Initially, I would like to state that while the defendant in this case was, and the appellant in this case was, a line mechanic, certainly the term line mechanic should be described in the facts of this case, should be described. This person was a person who's worked on a water removal, meter removal crew. This person, the defendant, appellant in this case, will go into citizens' homes and remove water meters from their homes and replace these water meters with other water meters. Then this individual was responsible for recording the readings off the meters and taking them back to the city and storing them in a facility. So if a resident of the city had a dispute in regard to their reading of their water meter, which in turn would reflect on their bill, they could then inquire with the city. The city could go back and check the actual meter to see what the readings were in that regard. So this person entered a private citizen's home.
On the other hand, though, Mr. Courts, if we're construing the term in the statute, and so though one can argue that this particular defendant had responsibilities that would suggest he might, what we're really looking is let's take the worst case, the clerk who says good morning to people and tells them to go to the water department, you know, so we have to look at that.
Yes, I agree with you, Your Honor, that's what we're here for, basically, but in the state position today, that particular employee that you have just suggested, any employee, would be considered under the statute. However, Mr. Virgin is, in his argument, referred to those particular employees and Flagerbeck in some way that's over-predictive, discussed an employee who would be just a lowly janitor who would take home a cleaning product or a paper clip. Now, I would like to make it clear in this particular case, that was not the case. This individual also had keys to the local facilities, all of the city fire department, and removed valuable material to the city, then went and sold the valuable material, and then did not turn in the proceeds of that, but thus depriving the city of both the material and the money that the defendant appellant received in this manner.
So you feel that we should judge the authority that a person has rather than the position?
I am merely stating that factually this case can be distinguished from the over-victim that was suggested.
But you seem to indicate that the clerk at the counter who has limited authority versus this person who has great authority was the difference.
No, I don't indicate that at all. And as I move along my argument, I'm going to make the argument that any employee, just as...
Then why did you point out what he did?
Well, I pointed out merely because I want to point out to this court that the facts of this case, that we shouldn't even address that issue in the facts of this case, because in Blackbeck and Kreischer, there are other distinguishing reasons why those employees, in fact, in every, Blazevic was a Cuyahoga County Court of Appeals decision. And in that particular decision, the Court of Appeals said The first question that they had to ask was, is this person a public official? And the definition of public official, as Mr. Birch has outlined, is any employee of the state or any political subdivision. I'll leave out all the subterfuge, but that's it. Any employee of the state or a political subdivision. They answered that question in last year. No, he was not an employee of the state, the city, or a political subdivision. So they didn't move on with any further analysis. In Chrysler, they answered the same question. No, this defendant who was charged with death in office is not an employee, does not meet the definition of employee.
And these were CETA workers, or, so they were paid by the federal government, and so we got off it there. But so those two cases maybe don't help us much for that reason.
Well, if you look at those two cases, they do help us in this regard. Those were decided, and specifically Blanchard was decided by the Chicago County Board of Appeals. Now, in the next series of cases that came down before that same court, which was State versus Cooper, State versus Haverbeck, State versus Sullivan, which I have cited in my brief, they have all discussed Blatchford. And what they have stated was that first test that the Court of Appeals did in Blatchford, were they a city employee? Were they an employee of the political subdivision? They answered all those in the affirmative, and they said, we need to go no further. They discussed Blatchford and said, we're going to distinguish Blagojevich because in that particular case, and Chrysler, in later decisions, they never answered the first question in the affirmative. They found that they were not an employee of the city, or an employee of the state, or an employee of the political subdivision. And many of these cases refer to Blagojevich as having obiter dictum, which is just dictum by the court, which has no bearing or no force.
Well, we don't have any of that here. He's clearly an employee of a subdivision here.
I don't
right?
think there's any dispute of that whatsoever.
Okay. So I understand your argument. And a park attendant, somebody that cuts grass for the city of Columbus, employee of the city, takes home a $9.95 rake. He's a public official and he's guilty of a felony in the fifth degree.
Well, again, Your Honor, I don't think we need to answer that. I will answer that.
But yeah, I like you to answer it because I don't see any distinction in your argument. It seems to me we're going to make every employee of every political subdivision a public official for purposes of crime classification.
I think that's what the legislature intended.
But that's your argument, isn't it?
That's my argument, yes.
Okay.
That's what the legislature intended. Mr. Birch has continually stated that by providing these examples of judges, legislators, and whatever, there are many situations in the criminal code where these lists are provided, not limited to, but including. And that's exactly what it says. Mr. Birch is standing before this court and making the argument that by providing those examples, the legislature has some way limited who this statute applies to.
Well, also, the definition of public official has employee in it, but the actual crime, and take the lawn worker, I suppose, we'd have to consider that to be convicted of the crime, there's two other factors that have to have to be shown, that the offender used his office in committing the offense, and that the property, that took property of the municipal corporation. So
that's correct. I think that the legislature in stating that language has somewhat made a distinction to anyone who's uncomfortable with the fact that a public employee, whether it be a high level or low level public employee, because section 1 says that you use your office and section 2 says or that you take public property.
Well, the example I gave you fits both.
That's correct.
He's using his office, he's an assistant park attendant,
yes.
Cuts grass, and took property of the subdivision, a rake, home with him to convert it to his own, to rake his own lawn, so he's converted it to his own use.
Yes.
So he's guilty of a felony of the fifth degree. Every public employee from now on.
Well, is a rake 500?
The rake would be, the distinction is,
difference.
Your Honor, is that any amount of money any amount of valuation is a felony of the fifth degree.
Exactly.
If it's over $500, then it becomes a felony of the fourth degree.
Right.
So the legislature has determined that any theft of a public employee, a public official, or of a public property is significant enough, and that you have to look at the legislative intent, why they did it. Why they chose to, and I think it's clear from the law, it's clear from the cases they have, that the public needs an accounting of their personal belongings, as far as the city's belongings, as far as the public official's conduct. Mr. Berth makes the argument about that low-level individual, that somehow that person should be precluded from being covered by the statute. I suppose if that were to be, and I understand that Mr. Burns may be making the argument, that the only people that should be included within the statute are legislators, judges, and law enforcement officers, because
they're... Counselor, yeah. Is it possible that language was put in there to make sure that nobody can misinterpret and think that judges and legislators are exempted?
I believe that that certainly could be part of the legislative intent in that particular matter. I mean, and I think Chief Justice Moore brings out an important question that I think will correspond with your question, and that is, what is the difference between someone who doesn't have a lot of authority as opposed to someone who has great authority stealing public property? There really is no difference.
You're a public employee too, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
So if you take one of the prosecutors, go into the storeroom and get one of the yellow pads and take it home to write your recipes on, you're guilty of a felony of the fifth degree.
I have to live by the rules, same as everybody.
The answer is you're guilty of a felony of the fifth degree.
I could be. Now, obviously, there's discretion in charging things like that.
You get credit if you bring those yellow pads back. I got a few.
I tried a case where a police officer was indicted for theft in office, where he was taking car wash money that was allotted to him and spending that on his personal affairs, and then putting in extra money for extra car wash money, and it amounted to a negligent amount. And we indicted and I tried that case, and the jury rendered a decision which was not favorable. But that person should have had to be held accountable, same as you or I would. If we are under the definition of public official, the statute entails that, the statute calls for that. I would like to spend some time again in this matter of these limited or including but not limited to. I think, again, as Joseph Stratton pointed out, that may have been the legislature's intent to show that we want judges, we want legislators, and we want law enforcement to be covered by the statute. There are many instances in the criminal code where those lists are provided. I can think of in the area of defining sexual conduct or sexual contact, there is a list there that say including but not limited to, and then it gives a sort of a laundry list. And this court and courts across the state of Ohio have always found conduct which was not included in that laundry list. But what fit the definition of sexual conduct to be there and to be proper, and that last line of this particular section A, includes but is limited to, has never been found to somehow be of the narrowing nature. And I don't think the legislature intended that when they wrote this particular statute.
You didn't mention, Mr. Courts, but maybe it's something we don't want to get into, but prosecutorial discretion, does that play any role here? With respect particularly to the issue, the concern that Justice Douglas raised. If a person takes a rake home, or you take a legal pad home, is it likely that you're going to be prosecuted for a felony for that? Or,
no, a rake.
I don't know.
A parking for a rake.
Yeah, the prosecutor has discretion in charging people with crime.
That's correct. And I don't know that that plays a particular role in the decision in this particular case as to whether or not this defendant should be included within the definition of a public official because of the amount of money that we're talking about, because of his going into a city garage and basically pilfering and stealing these items.
Well,
but there certainly is discretion.
We have a statute that we have to make some sense of as we apply it. Let me ask you, there is a, as we know, a fairly strong practice now in law enforcement, particularly in bigger, larger cities, of fixing broken windows, which the theory is that if you stop crime at the very, very low level, you prevent crime at a higher level. A rake home today and perhaps a computer from somebody's office tomorrow is what that sort of theory would suggest, that you're preventing a pattern of crime. Mr. General, do you think that's represented here in the policy of the statute? The General Assembly said, okay, we recognize that there are going to be some people who will take things that are of very low value. They're still going to be charged with a felony, but it's public property, and we want to discourage the taking of public property, and that's what this statute is.
Well, I think exactly that. If I'm a party employee who steals that rake, I'm not stealing my rake, I'm stealing the public's rake. And everybody in that city has a stake in that rake. Now, it sounds ridiculous that we're talking about a rake, but then you slide down the slippery slope. The statute put in said any employee taking any public property or using his office. Where do we draw the line? Where do we as prosecutors or judges draw that particular line as to when something is significant enough? It's not the rake situation, it's not the paperclip situation, or it's this water meter. There would be arguments raised that these water meters are to be discarded.
Oh, that's them, oh my gosh.
Well, they are straight up, but they as in this case, they incur a value to the city.
No wonder.
And the taking or theft of that deprives the city of both the meters and the money that the account in this particular case received.
You use your time.
Thank you,
Mr. Burge. Mr. Burge, you've used your time, which may take 30 seconds.
No, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.